This is John Quinlan with Stephanie Woods and Forward Forum. On today's show, we focus in on three remarkable women from Madison: Midge Miller, Leah Zeldin, and Rebecca Young, each a pioneering political leader. One woman contributed to a president's decision not to seek office in the face of opposition to an unjust war against the backdrop of a life dedicated to world peace. Another woman's contributions as a lifelong social justice advocate and a love of good food came together in the form of some extraordinary community dinners where people broke bread together and forged new relationships. And yet another woman never compromised her principles nor lost an election in 12 successive runs for political office, including county board, school board, and the state legislature. Midge Miller, Leah Zeldin, and Rebecca Young transcended simple descriptions. They defied boxes, and each was an individual with her own unique range of interests and accomplishments. Yet each of these women had something important in common. They stepped forward into political life at a time when women were still too often invisible. Each was a pioneer who helped forge the way for the many younger women who later followed, overcoming double binds and double standards. Through their refreshingly inclusive and facilitative leadership, they inspired the involvement of countless other people for the benefit of women and men alike, people from all walks of life. For the next hour, we have a very special tribute today to three remarkable women: Midge Miller, Leah Zeldin, and Rebecca Young.
People come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn, and we are led to those who help us most grow if we let them, and we help them in return. Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you. Like a
car. And welcome back again to Forward Forum. John Quinlan here with
Stephanie Woods.
And really looking forward to this show, Steph. It's been kind of interesting as we've been putting it out there in the last few days. I think a lot of people feeling what Kristen Chenoweth with there is conveying, and that these three remarkable women who we've lost in the last 6 months have just really made a difference in people's lives. And do you have any impressions just having gone through some of the bios and the other
things? I'm embarrassed to admit I wasn't familiar with the lives of them at all. But in reading the articles, I was just fascinated by how much they did and how many titles they had, you know, mother, wife, sister, community activist, in the working in whatever jobs they had.
Yeah.
Just a huge presence everywhere.
Well, you know, I'm not surprised that you haven't necessarily heard of folks. I think that is a disconnect sometimes with our history, with folks that have gone before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know you've always had a just profound appreciation for that legacy. And it's not just young women, but maybe it's other folks who don't always know who went before to make it possible
mm-hmm.
for them.
It's important to get in touch with that so we don't feel so alone when we're doing it.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, to get us through the next hour and to share some memories of these three particular women, and again, it's Midge Miller, Leah Zeldin, Rebecca Young, is a guest in studio, Judy Karofsky. And Judy is a longtime activist. And matter of fact, upon Midge's death, some beautiful quotes, remembering being in her mid-20s, meeting Midge at that time when so much was happening in Madison back in the mid to late 60s, and has continued her activism to the present day. And we'll be interspersing a lot of that as we go into this. And we also have on the phone another special guest, and that's Nan Cheney. Nan, also someone who's worked on behalf of peace and social justice issues throughout her life. We had the privilege of serving together on the Wisconsin Community Fund board. Let me start with Judy. Welcome to Forward Forum. Good to have you here today.
Glad to be here, John. I really am.
And Nan, welcome.
Thanks. Hi, John.
Hi. Well, thanks so much for doing this. Well, as we get started, again, that song to me just really evokes the notion of people coming into our lives and making a difference. Maybe that's a place to start, Judy. I think we'll begin this segment maybe exploring in greater depth Midge Miller's life. How did she impact your life?
Well, I sit here and think I really am a lucky Madisonian, aren't I? Because I had the chance to know all three women and others. We also lost Becky Young this winter, and that should not go unsaid. And I was lucky enough to work with all of them. Actually, I think Midge and I first became connected in the campaign of 67, 68, the Eugene McCarthy campaign. And I was reminded of it because as we moved my mom, who's now 91, from Florida to Madison to become a co-resident of Midge's at a retirement center, the world coming full circle, my mother had a picture of me and my then baby daughter sitting in the Gene McCarthy campaign office right around the time of the McCarthy primary. And very recently, just because I was able to see Midge frequently in the last couple of years because of the retirement center, we just in the corridor talked about Gene McCarthy coming to Madison in the wake of the great of Barack Obama, and we John Kerry here, and we had had Mondale Ferraro. But when Gene McCarthy came to Madison, it was just 4 or 5 years after the death of President Kennedy, and it was the first time, I believe, that we all felt like something wonderful could happen again. It had been so sad and so dark for all of us, the death and then, of course, the war buildup, the Vietnam War buildup. And it was always in my mind that when McCarthy walked into the field house, the sun shined. There was a spotlight on his head, and I wondered if I'd imagined that. And Midge told me, no, that really happened, that he walked in with a bright halo. So from those moments, I did know who Midge Miller was. And like Nan, of course, there were so many times and so many meetings over the years. It was so difficult to be working in anything that had to do with the Democratic Party, especially, or progressive causes, or peace, and not have Midge be right there and keep us all straight.
Nan, you were telling me last night that before you moved to Madison when you were up in Menominee, and you were saying, of course, you're in the sphere of Humphrey at the time, and so maybe the McCarthy part doesn't figure in as much. But but you all established a bond just on a more personal basis early on, right?
Right, but no, I was here. What I said to you was that I was late in getting to the McCarthy campaign,
right?
Because of that Humphrey connection, we thought of him as our third senator.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's true. She saw the right one, and it was an exciting campaign.
And just to, again, to in terms of your connection, it was also just going to the park and swimming and having your children get to know each other.
Yeah, well, she was an early friend of Jill Reynolds, who was a friend of mine, and I remember sitting on the beach at Vilas Park with our kids who were swimming, and we were getting to know one another. And I have to say that before very long, I was really involved in her campaign for assembly when she, against all odds, beat three men in the Democratic primary and then went on to beat a Republican incumbent to become my assemblywoman, where she was for years. And the wonderful thing about Midge, one of the wonderful things about Midge, was that she used her position. She didn't really think that she had to limit it to just Wisconsin issues. She thought that, peace, for instance, was everybody's business, and she got really involved in a national way, trying to bring peace to the world. She was right there when we began, years ago we started Women for a Peaceful Christmas. But because of her presence in council, I think that probably gained more credence than it would have had it been just a bunch of us.
Yeah.
Starting out, and that was surely true again when we did the Network for Peace and Justice. It was her presence, her membership on our board. She was vice president for a number of years that gave us the stature that we needed to really gain attention.
You know, you're describing a couple of qualities, it sounds like. It's you know, there certainly was a charisma and a draw to Midge based on who she was, how she presented herself. But it also strikes me that she was someone who was very facilitative and inclusive in her leadership. She brought others into these fights.
She did.
But Midge always, in her own words, explained how she did it. One thing she did, John, was remain partisan. I remember visiting, I don't think I was a member at that point, but visiting a League of Women Voters meeting at the Cuba Club, so figure out how long ago that was. But I just remember Midge standing up and saying that she had chosen the Democratic Party as her vehicle rather than the League of Women Voters. And clearly that's what she did. As Nan said, she went on and she became a member of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. I don't even know if we could count how many national conventions Midge Miller went to. Mm-hmm. She was just always there and always present. And she was colorful. You know, Midge always wore the silk jacket, and you have to ask her where she got it, a silk jacket from Japan or something that a child had given her. And didn't she wear her hair up in that sort of bun chignon things for all those years, Nan, and she always had ribbons around her hair. So presentation was part of her game, too. She knew how to make it obvious that Midge Miller was in the room and leading the conversation.
Well, you know, if you could, just to help some of our listeners, and, you know, I was five in 1960, so I may need a little help there, too, 1965, but I need some help there, too. But just to remember the backdrop of all of this, that women hadn't been involved in politics in a big way at this point. I mean, these were pioneering days.
They were, John. And, you know, I was trying to think of a possible commonality between the women that we're discussing today.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that was interesting about the mid to late 60s, which is actually when I was a little younger, but when I arrived on this campus, there was something called faculty wives. So these were women who clearly did not spend their time in faculty wives, nor did a lot of others, because I don't think there's that organization any longer. And not that faculty wives wasn't a good thing, but I think that these women that we're talking about today had the ability to do what they did because of the relationships that they were in, and clearly with respect to these women, it was their marriages, and that they had spouses who were advanced, settled in a system that was perhaps a little bit more male oriented, and that's what gave them the ability to move on as strong women. When we talk about Midge or Becky or hopefully Betty Smith, there are several others who are in that category, and I think it was just a whole different time, and again, it's sort of a it doesn't fit, but when you think about it, doesn't fit that they would have felt independent. They didn't have to be. They didn't choose to be stay-at-home moms to the strong men that were in their households. They were strong in their own right and took off in ways that women had never been active before.
I think Midge was quoted in an interview, asked about, well, weren't you intimidated by being in the midst of all those men in the legislature, for example? And, you know, she pointed that out. Well, I've gone through two strong husbands and seven strong sons, and I feel very comfortable working in the company of men. And yet, you know, again, it wasn't – she was somebody who was very strong in herself to be able to do that.
And she had a good conspirator in Mary Lou Muntz, who we should also talk about, who, goodness, is still with us, although she's moved out of state. But Midge and Mary Lou, and at that time it was David Clarenbach, were the three liberal representatives for the Madison area.
Like in the 70s, yeah.
And we have to say, too, though, that they represented us.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave them strength, too.
Absolutely.
I mean, we are kind of a bubble. And so they could do things that perhaps others who were truly worried about being reelected, and that seems to be the big thing that they all worry about as soon as they get there.
They brought women behind them and supportive women. Let's not forget Liesel Bloxstein, whose sole purpose in life was to help keep women like Midge and Mary Lou in public office, and Simon.
Mary Louise Simon.
I'm sorry. Right. And also
Verna Hill, of course.
Verna and Dorothy and all of
Dorothy Shannon.
Yeah. And they would go. They would spend whole Saturday mornings with their elected officials, just helping them remain in office. It was Betty Salmon's name that I was struggling over, not Mary Louise Simon.
Right.
But Betty Salmon was another one who lived next to Liesel, and Betty and Liesel would just plot on how to keep these women in office. And we talked a lot about how and why Midge ran as Midge, which was also very interesting.
And that Marjorie we were thinking?
Right.
Or, yeah.
Right. Was her name Marjorie or Margaret, Dan?
Marjorie.
Marjorie. But yet she ran as Midge, which is a very interesting thing for a powerful woman. That she wasn't Midge Miller on her buttons or her campaign literature. So she still ran as a woman. So she still was that woman in the bright jacket and her hair up and tied in ribbons.
Well, again, you know, just such a special era, it sounds, as we talk more and more. I mean, you know, first of all, I think, Nan, you're right in that this was a special place, and it wasn't just, you know, people up on a pedestal. And I don't think any of these women, you know, wanted to be on a pedestal anyway or wanted to necessarily draw attention to themselves, because part of this was a humility and, you know, a notion that I can't do this alone. But these were truly remarkable individuals. I mean, there's that dichotomy about it. And you were telling me earlier, Judy, too. I mean, there was so much overlap in terms of this strong feminist strain, strong women becoming politically involved in Madison. What was happening nationally? Folks like Bella Abzug would drop in, and of course Kay Clarenbach, someone who's connected.
We should be mentioning Kay, whom we lost too early, but she was clearly of the stature and caliber, and her work was as important as the women that we're talking about today.
Yeah, go ahead, Nan.
Now I forgot what I was going
to say. Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
Get in there right away.
Going a lot of directions at once. It's all right. What memories do you have? I mean, did that feel like at the time that it was something really special that you had? You had so much going on?
Yeah. And you could never say no to Midge. That was another thing about that era, and I think that's what I was trying to say. At that time, in order to get elected, you really needed people working on your campaign. Therefore, she could go back to all of us to get our opinions, or we could go to her and expect that she would be available. I don't think that that's so true anymore. When you can have automated phone calls, they don't even need us anymore to make the dreaded phone calls. Well, we surely don't need to stuff envelopes anymore. But Midge had such and Becky and Mary Lou, they had so many really committed workers behind them. So I hope we don't lose that. It's so important.
All right.
Both the candidate or the office holder and the citizen.
For the hour, we're going to be talking about some remarkable women. And as we continue the discussion, the list grows longer, because this is a time when Madison was truly blessed with just some very outstanding people. We're starting out our discussion talking about Midge Miller, a longtime state legislator, someone who's very involved in the Eugene McCarthy campaign, 1968, that campaign which, of course, ultimately convinced Lyndon Johnson not to run again as president. And I have some thoughts on that in just a second. Also wanted to touch on a couple of other recent losses, Leah Zeldin, and stuff. I think I was telling you after last Sunday show, remarkable potluck that happened last weekend. Judy, you were there, right? Or, no, you weren't? Okay, that's all right.
That many people that you didn't know she was there or not.
No, it can't be everywhere at once.
Typical of all these people, I was overscheduled.
Yes.
Oh. And John, the song that you played at the very beginning was so appropriate, because, you know, I don't know where I would be had it not been for Midge or for Leah, who was my neighbor in Crestwood. I think I just would be a different person.
Yeah.
Those people were turning points of my life.
Specifically, what was it, Nan, that she did that inspired you?
Who?
We'll start with Midge.
Yes, yeah, any of them.
Well, specifically, you know, thinking of living in Crestwood, we lived there as newly married young parents. I knew who to vote for, because I would pass John and Esther Lawton's house every day, and I knew by their lawn signs who to vote for. but Leah, you know, just she really presented me with a point of view that I never would have had growing up in Menominee, Wisconsin. And she really, I think, was tremendously important. I ended up having to sort of draw back a bit, but I mean, I wasn't ready to go exactly where she was leading, but surely she was a strong woman who meant a lot to me.
And I want to play just a clip, just a second, clip 7, if you could cue that up, Steph, from this observance last weekend. It was the mother of all potlucks as they build it, and very appropriate for Leia in the sense that one of the things that she did was to bring people together, for example, on King Day for a big community potluck, people from all walks of life, and made sure that it wasn't some homogenized version of a celebration of Dr. King's life, too, that it was very political, very relevant. And before I do that, so we get through all three folks, just also, again, as we go into the hour, I'll be talking more about Rebecca Young. Becky was someone who was a county board supervisor, school board member, and then 7 terms in the state legislature, probably a half generation or so later than the time we're talking about with Midge and Mary Lou and others. But again, another very pioneering leader. For me, I think the politician or the legislator who I kind of got to know first and learned so much from back in the early and mid-80s. So it should be a very interesting discussion as we go on. As we go out of this segment, though, I do want to share, this is Sherry, Leah's daughter-in-law, both sharing an invocation that the family gave recently and also kind of an amusing poem that really evokes who Leah was all about.
One thing I wanted to share with you was a Jewish blessing that we said together as a family at Lee's burial. May all the world rejoice in love and exult in justice. Let them beat their swords into plowshares. Let them beat their spears into pruning hooks. Let nation not lift up sword against nation. Let them study war no more. Let us not hate another in our hearts. Let us love our neighbors as ourselves. And just one more thing. I found a Langston Hughes poem that has Leia's name written all over it. So I'd like to quote the poem, and it's called Evil. Looks like what drives me crazy don't have no effect on you, but I'm going to keep on at it till it drives you crazy too. Thank you.
Judy Kurofsky, sound familiar?
Yeah, absolutely. I just have one, anecdote to add. After so many have been said about Leah, several years ago, maybe 10 or 11 years ago, she asked me to speak at the Martin Luther King community dinner.
Yeah.
But she gave me my topic, and what she wanted me to talk about was zip codes. Zip codes.
Zip codes.
Zip codes I have known. So I sat in my house, and I had no idea how I was going to tie this into the Martin Luther King Day community dinner celebration. So, of course, she made me think about all the places I have lived. That's exactly what she wanted me to do, from the time when I lived someplace when we didn't even have zip codes. So it was sort of my personal history of how I became alert and aware of all of the issues that she was supporting.
Oh, interesting.
Smart woman.
All right. Again, we're speaking with Judy Kurofsky and Ann Cheney on the phone about the lives of some remarkable women. Focusing in today on Midge Miller, Leah Zeldin, and Rebecca Young. But perhaps you have some other folks that you want to add to our list. And as you can hear from our discussion, there's so many remarkable women from that era. I'll be back with Ford Forum in just a moment.
Get ready, war machine. Big guys riding high on power.
To Ford Forum, John Quinlan here with
Stephanie Woods.
And I kind of picked that song
Interesting song.
With a little bit of ambivalence because the meek, not the way we would describe the women we were talking about here today, but I think one of the threads that is through all of their lives is this devotion to peace, standing up against an establishment that was very much committed to war in the 60s. And arguably, I'm not sure we could have done it without these remarkable women coming forward. You know, and toward that end, actually, if we could flip over to track three for just a second, we've been talking about some of this history. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, just to reiterate, the year was 1968, and the Vietnam War had extended on through much of that decade. And it was the time of the presidential primaries. Eugene McCarthy, seemingly, for some people anyway, came out of nowhere. And while Richard Nixon won resoundingly in the New Hampshire primary and became the front runner, LBJ won, but just by a very, very small margin. And that shook a lot of people up, including LBJ. He continued to succeed through the next few months, including Wisconsin primary did fairly well. Is that right, Judy?
Yes, he did.
And this ended with the following developments at the end of March. Here is a speech that LBJ gave on March 31st of 1968 that surprised the nation.
On March 31st, Lyndon Johnson concluded a comprehensive address on Vietnam policy, looked over to Lady Bird Johnson, and then stunned the nation.
It is true that a house divided against itself is a house that cannot stand. There is division in the American house now, and believing this as I do, I have concluded that I should not permit the presidency to become involved in the partisan divisions that are developing in this political year. Accordingly, I shall not seek and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
Nancini, do you remember that speech?
Yeah, I do.
And did it take you by surprise?
It did. Oh, yes. We were all shocked and relieved. Actually, it was the thing we'd been hoping that would happen.
Did you feel a sense of connectedness?
To
things that were happening here, and specifically with Midge.
I think, and all of the things that we went through trying to stop that war, and Midge was right out there at the forefront.
Judy, your thoughts?
And of course. I mean, it was the beginning of an amazing 6 months, because actually within a week, Martin Luther King was gone. Within a few more months, Robert Kennedy was gone. So to talk about the emotional level and to think about how people continue to build a new nation, and there was Midge at the forefront, and she really was. And when you said that Gene McCarthy came out of nowhere, he later has said, and it's been quoted many times, that it was Midge who convinced him that he could and should run. It just began an era of our belief that things could turn around and be good again.
Yeah. Excuse me. Well, I did want to return to something we were talking about in the break. Again, apologies if we're jumping around a bit, but we want to do some justice to each of these three remarkable women. And in terms of Rebecca Young, part of the remarkable part of her career is it was so varied. Again, just mentioned county board, school board, then the legislature. But it went even beyond that.
Indeed it did. And one of the things that did differentiate Becky from the others was that she held a very high appointed position in state government. And the credit goes, of course, to Pat Lucey and his administration. But I actually was a friend of Bob Dunn's, who was the secretary of the Department of Administration, which was much smaller then. It was so small that it was housed within the same building as the Department of Health and Human Services, or Health and Family Services, I guess we called it. But I remember the day he said, "What do you think? We're going to appoint Becky Young as deputy." And so here was somebody who wasn't only caught up in the emotion and the needs of women and peace and the country, but actually very solid quantitatively and could run the numbers that were necessary for that to hold that kind of position. And she had served on the Railroad Commission. So Becky was recognized for her smarts, and I always respected her for that. At one point, I was the mayor of a small city just west of I was just an alder in a small city west of Middleton. And I was quoted in the paper of having said something about creeping duplexism, because somebody wanted to increase duplexes on a lot in a, what was then a single-family housing development. I didn't even really know Becky Young, but I received – this is before email, of course. I received a letter so fast telling me that it was so important to have all kinds of housing in the community, and of course it was, and to have all kinds of housing available to the residents of a community. And of course it was, and of course she was right. And from then on, we remained good friends.
I think that's one of the things I remember about her office. I think I was working on tenants' rights, fair housing issues in the 80s, and her office was the first office I really collaborated with. But as you said, it was an instant response. It wasn't a, hey, we're busy, it's going to take a couple of weeks before we can get back to you type of thing. And you know, and she had some remarkable people working for her too, including, I think as the paper was mentioning, at least one person who did it for free 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was a wonderful woman. But I worked for a legislator who had an office right next door to her.
Okay.
So I could observe. I think that was the hardest working office that I ever observed in the Capitol. Those staffers were always doing really important things. And to be reminded of the woman, and now I can't think of her name, who was there every day as a volunteer and busy all the time that she was there. Not just busy, but doing things that made a difference.
Absolutely. We'll see if by the end of the hour we can find that, because I know that was mentioned in the, yeah, in Becky, the article that appeared. Becky at the time. Go ahead.
She did do twice the work in half the time. Uh-huh. It was just amazing how much Becky could accomplish and did.
And her staff.
So as you're hearing this discussion, just any other thoughts on some of the threads that maybe are
I'm just amazed that these strong women could keep so many aspects of their lives together, just juggling so many things. As a person who has three jobs and does a lot of things myself, it seems like the busier I am, the more I'm able to do more. Is that maybe how these women are able to continue? I don't know them personally like you guys do. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. They just never stop.
That's what it seems like.
In 2004, I was active in the Wisconsin Women for Carrie Edwards, and we had a meeting at my house in downtown Madison. And Midge, of course, came to the meeting. And that was a night in the summer when we had tornadoes, and we had terrible storms that summer, so there was a tornado warning, sirens. And Mitch just said, okay, we'll go down the basement. And my basement is basically a cellar. So we went down to the basement, and we just kept the meeting going because Midge was there. And, of course, we would keep meeting. She just didn't stop. And well, I have to say I was really blessed to – I'm sorry, Nan.
Well, related in a similar way, the time that she was in Washington, D.C. doing lobbying when 9/11 happened, mm-hmm. and the plane – ran right into
you went into the Pentagon.
Thank you. And Midge just kept right on, you know. She lobbied right. I can't remember the whole story, but I know that it didn't deter her, and she stayed another 2 or 3 days to finish what she was working on.
Yeah, I remember reading, you know, the day, of course, in the midst of all the national news is overwhelming everything. Here was Midge just kind of trucking on and continuing to do what she did.
Yeah.
And somehow that helped to put it in perspective a little bit, be a little bit reassuring, I think.
Yeah.
But remember what Nan said? You could never say no to Midge. So if she cornered you or lobbied you, I presume, you just had to stand there and listen. She always had a message, always had a message.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That's interesting. What was it about her that would make you guys say yes? Because a lot of people can be very pressuresome, and it'd be easy to say, you know, no, get out of my face. But she doesn't. What was it about her that made her special, that made people want to do what she was pushing for?
Well, I think she worked as hard as she was asking you.
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't ask you to do something that she wasn't. Oh, one thing she did to me, she sent me off to Virginia to work for two Republican candidates for I think it was for their state legislature, because they were pro-ERA. So I dutifully went off.
So partisanship had a few limits
here. All the way out there and spent like a week on the telephone calling people to
to get their votes out for these two men.
Wow.
That's amazing.
The other thing that Midge did, and this was very, very important, especially in that era, was open up her house. A lot of the campaign meetings were at her house. And if a meeting was at her house, it ended with Babcock Hall ice cream. she knew that that was just important for people to understand how she lived. And even after she downsized from the big house that she and Ed and all those kids lived in University Heights, and she lived on DeRose Terrace, a time came when Jim Doyle was running for governor, and the film crew for the ads wanted a house that was light and bright and flowery, and Midge's house came to mind. And sure enough, the ad crew, the movie crew, I guess it was, took over that house for a day, moved furniture around and put people in place and filmed ads. Midge was just always ready to say yes when other people asked also.
Very interesting. Well, actually, could we relate a little bit, the two women, Midge Miller, Rebecca Young, as I said, in some ways, I think so. Becky's service was after Midge's for the most part, I think. Is that right?
You know, so I'm
in the state legislature.
It's tough remembering the years. Becky, of course, was on the county board.
Right.
Was
she was doing other things before
then. School
board
and county board, Nan?
She definitely was. Yes, she was.
Yep.
And county board, you're right.
Correct.
And so that
was. She was in the She stayed longer than Midge.
Right, but I think her. I mean, Midge essentially, I think, was gone by by say the Reagan era, and then and Becky was in there in the mid 80s or so. But anyway, I guess what I'm alluding to is that seat. I think as his you know, the first time, as you were saying earlier, this history of Midge against four male opponents,
right,
all well known. She established it as kind of a woman's seat. And
now we're fortunate to have Therese Bersow.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
Well, Therese took Becky's seat.
Yeah, of course, redistricting had changed the boundaries of the district somewhat.
Yeah. So it's not quite as
clear. And actually, when Midge decided not to run again, seven women ran to fill her seat.
Wow.
But, of course, the one man got it. I mean,
Spencer Black holds
the seat.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. And he's doing a great job.
We're proud of Spencer, too.
Just wanted to backtrack. We were mentioning some of the people who were hardworking in that office, Rebecca Young. And the person I was trying to think of who actually volunteered several days a week was Ruth Loomis.
Oh, right.
And then the two staffers, Shirley Lake and John Peacock.
Both hardworking.
Yeah, no question about it. Again, our guests on the phone are Nan Cheney, a longtime activist for peace and justice, involved in many realms of politics here, as is Judy Kurofsky, former mayor of Middleton, and involved in Judy, actually, why don't you help me? What other kinds of things should we bring out about your current activism, your interests?
I think mostly right now my focus is on affordable housing, John, let's just say low-income housing.
That's a good area. It's close to my own heart. So, again, what we're talking about throughout the remainder of this hour are some of the remarkable women that all of us have been privileged to know. Midge Miller, who passed away just recently, a longtime state legislator among many other roles in our community. Leah Zeldin, who's more known in the realm of the grassroots. Again, someone also we lost this month. And then Rebecca Young, who passed away this past November, someone who performed many roles, including seven terms in the state legislature. And we'll be back with Ford Forum in just a moment.
This is Forward Forum. I'm Stephanie Woods here with John Quinlan, and we are very pleased to have former Middleton mayor and longtime activist Judy Kurofsky and longtime activist Nan Cheney with us today. We are remembering the life and accomplishments of Midge Miller, Leah Zeldin, and Rebecca Young, or Becky Young, as you guys all seem to be referring to her as. John, did you know her?
Yeah, no.
So you did too?
Becky, as I mentioned, when I was starting to work as an activist in the mid '80s, her office was a place for fair housing legislation, mm-hmm. tenants' rights, a lot of the affordable housing, for that mm-hmm. matter, a lot of things mm-hmm. was working on back then. And as I said, I think it was a natural first stop because such a hardworking staff, and they were so responsive and so willing to work with people out in the community. So so lots of good memories there. With Leah, it's interesting. I think our paths kind of crossed some over the years, but I've had this experience with a bunch of folks that maybe it was just the last year or two that I felt like I really had a solid bond with her or connection. You know, she was up at the Media Reform Conference with us.
Yeah, I can't remember meeting if I met her or not.
Yeah, and we had lunch together a couple times, just shared some pizza and other things. I remember I helped her get to the motel one night, for which she just was out of proportion, really grateful. and then this last special memory was in February. We were all gathered at the Dardanelles, and that was a special memory because it involved the breaking of bread and sitting around a table and sharing stories with people. Harry Wasburn, you know, our intern, who's a young activist, who doing a lot of great stuff in terms of community campus activism. It was fun to introduce the two of them. And I think they hit it off right away. And I think there was Leah just really felt affirmed. And then she gets this from a lot of places, including from her grandkids, mm-hmm. That there is a next generation, you know, carrying on.
I like the article that you sent me in the Cap Times about her that John Nichols had wrote about her. She started those free
King
community
Day.
Meals. Mm-hmm. Right. And just how important food was to her in the community mm-hmm. and bringing everybody together. And all these women just sound fantastic.
There was something that aired on a video of the potluck that aired yesterday. And it was kind of fun because Luciano had gone and done all these interviews with everybody, was asking them about each of the dishes. And this was a potluck buffet. If you've ever been in the Labor Temple that extended for the full length, it was a good half a football field long, you know, with all these different dishes, and everybody had some story about a food that was significant to a country they had visited or that they were from, or some way that this food was relevant to a life change that they'd made in terms of more healthy living or something else. And so it kind of makes sense that she had that association. And one of the things she did at WRT, where she was a longtime broadcaster, was she did both a health show, but she always managed to get a food review in there. Mm-hmm. And so she would travel to Amman, Jordan, or to Chicago for a conference or something, and would have a great little review. And one of the guys who did a memory actually said that he got into a little trouble with the law, and she called him at the Dane County Jail for him to do a review of the food there.
She would go to fundraisers and then review the food that was served at the fundraiser.
Now that's putting people on the spot.
She wrote little cookbooks.
Yeah.
And I still have them. Once when I ran for, I guess, assembly, she wanted to help me in some way. And it was at the time, there was an alternative newspaper. Oh, that's not
Press Connection.
But that would have been long. Maybe it's when I ran for county board. Uh-huh. Two unsuccessful tries. But she did a little column at the time of favorite recipes, and she did a column for me with my ginger snap recipe.
Oh, yeah?
A winning recipe. But she catered my daughter's wedding, and it was just fabulous. I remember people going home with little poached trout sticking out of napkins. She had a wonderful garlic soup. It was just unlike any. It will never happen again.
You know, I think back on last weekend, Saturday. Another thing that you and Judy and I have had a chance to be a part of is some of the Verna Hill tributes through Wisconsin Community Fund, the Cardinal Bar, and some of the remarkable women we've been able to honor there.
Right.
And Judy was just reminding me in the break not to mention that we should definitely talk a little about Betty Smith.
A Republican.
Right.
Woman.
In the spirit of diversity, we honored Betty Smith.
So involved in all of the civil rights things that we did early on in this. Early 70s and late 60s.
And ran for mayor.
Well, that's right. She did.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just the Democrats. And there was it was a fun evening that night. People just kind of gently taking, you know, jabs at Republican stuff, and yet, you know, really saying, "Hey, Betty, you know, you're one of us."
Yeah. She was. She truly, and she surely was a good friend of the three women that we're talking about.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah. And just somebody else off of that who was honored was Ada Deer. Again, just another aspect of someone who was history making and just has a long history in Madison. So anyway,
and throughout the country,
absolutely,
and throughout the country,
absolutely. Actually, so talking about this impact throughout the country, I just mentioned in passing. So, did you have a Bella Abzug story? I think you were starting to tell me last night. Judy?
Only that because Midge was a friend of hers. Bella, I have to try, from Boston. Bella came to Madison in about 1978, and I had the chance to meet her. Because then I was on Martin Schreiber's staff, and she came to the state capitol because of Midge, and we had a chance to meet Bella and her hat. And then 2 years later, I was quite involved in the Ted Kennedy campaign, 1980, Kennedy for president, and Bella came to speak at my house, which was – so I just had the chance to know Bella, and of course she was so close to Midge. That's how high Midge rose in the national ranks of – women doing things.
I got to show for Bella. Bella.
Really?
Yeah.
With
that
or without
the
hat.
Political clumps. Midge said I could go get her from wherever she was with her husband. Must have been there.
She was with her husband. Absolutely.
And I had a thing I wanted to tell her to support, and now I can't remember just what it was. But really, Bella was not so interested in listening to what I had to say, but more interested in telling me what she had to say. I finally stopped the car, parked it, and said, "Now this is what I want to tell you." So she had to listen.
She probably didn't have to do that with Midge. I think Midge was a listener, too, wasn't she?
She was a listener, too.
Yeah. I'm sure they were a match for each other.
And I remember, though, having Midge, both Midge and Mary Lou were at lunch at my house. And there must have been a couple of other people, too. It was very hard for anyone to get a word in edgewise. And that's when I devised the talking stick thing. If you had a wooden spoon in your hand, you could talk, and then they had to listen. But they surely did have paragraphs of things to say, and we all wanted to know it. But now and then, it was a good thing to get a word in.
So someone else from that era who, at the time of Midge's death, the Isthmus had a link to an interview from a couple of years ago, and that was Gloria Steinem.
Mm-hmm.
I know the two of them were very close, and Gloria in that interview just made it really clear, as are the two of you, that Midge was a major source of inspiration for her.
Well, and I went with Midge to a meeting that she had set up in Washington and it took place in her sister's house, but Gloria Steinem was there. There were only about a dozen people. This is when Midge was working on setting up an office in Washington that was worried about the radical right. She really had an influence there. Well, and Gloria came to Midge's house, and I got to meet her.
And Gloria appeared also in 2004 for the Kerry campaign. She actually came to Madison. It didn't receive all that much press, but we all went to the Hilton, and Gloria showed up a little late, looking gorgeous, but saying all the things that she needed to say to keep the women involved for Kerry.
And talking about that understanding early on about the radical right and, you know, how to try to counter some of the negative things that they were doing. My memory from, I think, 3 years ago this month was in Washington at a national spiritual progressives conference. And Midge was exhorting the congregation that we as people of faith should not let the religious right, you know, hold the mantle here, and that communities of faith were very, very important to everything that was accomplished in the 60s, and we've got to reclaim that.
Yeah,
and very important to Midge throughout her life, and I think that point has been made.
Yeah,
also
we're down to just about our last minute and a half here, but Judy, you were also saying an interesting thing about recent history.
Yeah, just one last thing that I think about it. A year ago or a year and a half ago, it was almost sort of a no-brainer that Midge would be there for Hillary Clinton. But once she started to figure out who and what Barack Obama was, she was there, and she couldn't be dissuaded. And I just, again, feel blessed not only that I knew her and the other women that we're talking about today, but on Inauguration Day, I went to watch the inauguration with my mom, who's a co-resident of the retirement center where Midge was. And I got to, I had the opportunity to watch Midge watch Barack Obama be sworn in.
Oh, well, hey, what a wonderful conversation today. Thank you both, Judy Kurofsky and Nan Cheney. Again, we've been talking about the lives of Midge Miller, Leah Zeldin, Rebecca Young, so many other women who made a big difference here. Again, John Quinlan with Stephanie Wood for Forward Forum.